สะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมทัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมทัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะบุทธังธัมมังสังฆังนะมัสสามิOne of the verbs that's used when the Buddha gives meditation instruction is in Pali, patisangveti, which is usually translated as experience, to experience, as one is training to calm the mind, to be able to experience the body as one's breathing in, to experience the body as one's breathing out. And it's a useful word to remind ourselves of, that meditation and practice and training has to rely on experience. Just the words that we use, they affect how we relate to our practice, our training. In the root of the word experience is, it's from the Latin, and literally it means to try, so that trying, attempting, doing, experiencing. And say like the one of the words that we use for mindfulness, or say awareness, like the word aware is its root is from Greek, which means to see. And there's a subtle difference in that. Because we oftentimes, when we're talking about meditation or practice, we talk about, say, watching the breath, seeing the mind. And there's a certain distance there, isn't there? There's a certain not engaging in terms of different from experiencing. To experience, to engage with the practice, engage with the meditation, as to just to see, to watch, to observe, as if it didn't really affect us that much anyway. But the reality is, of course, is that we, how we approach things, how we engage with things, how we're mindful and aware of things affects how we experience it. So to pay attention to experience, and this is something that Ajahn Chah would put a lot of attention on. They say the practice of Dhamma as an experience, and something that we engage in, that we try and try over and over again. Remember one of the images that he gave for meditation was like learning how to learning how to sew, and in the like sewing with one of those old treadle machines, so that you have to use your feet, and you have to use your hands, and you have to coordinate with you. So everything is engaged in the sewing. To learn how to sew, you're engaged, you're experiencing. In order for it to become accomplished and to actually learn how to sew something, you have to try over and over again until you learn how to coordinate and learn how to work those things together. So in the same way, in meditation, we have to learn how to engage, experience, and to try over and over again. It's not just a passive observation of a mental state, because it affects everything. I mean, if in terms of our actions, our speech, our emotions, our feelings, they're not separate. They're working together. Or ideally, they should be working together. Oftentimes, it's not the case. I mean, it tends to be kind of disparate, sort of passing ships in the night. The relationship between our knowledge, awareness, and our actions, our emotions, our feelings, sometimes they're going in many different directions. But to do something about it, we have to learn how to experience that, to tune into that, to learn how to work with things, to try trying out different things, because the fundamental goal, whether we're practicing or not practicing, whether we're Buddhist or not Buddhist, even whether we're human or not human, is to experience happiness and to be not have to experience suffering. It's a fundamental desire, fundamental wish, aspiration. So too, learning how to recognize that and to work from that that kind of aspiration or that intention, so that we're able to become more experienced, more skilled at cultivating happiness and well-being, and say more experienced and more skilled at relinquishing suffering. And you know, if we pay attention, and if we keep returning to experience, then you know, we really do learn. So that being willing to keep returning to experience, because we. Say it's our own unwillingness to stick with practice or training or learning something new, learning the skills, or getting caught up in the desire to get something else, so that there's willingness to keep returning to experience. This is where Ajahn Chah, like when he is asked, you know, how do you teach Westerners? I mean, you don't understand, you don't speak English, and they don't speak Thai. How can you teach them? And one of the times he answered, I mean, he had many different answers for this. One of the times he answered, he said, not so difficult to teach Westerners. It's just like teaching buffalo. Just pull them this way, pull them that way. Sooner or later, they learn. Which is, you know, it sounds very flip. But again, he's coming back to that fundamental principle of experience, that as human beings, what we best learn from is experience, and to learn how to pay attention to experience, to learn how to tune into experience, and to not tune it out, which is what we often do. We tend to. I mean, it's always amazing how we see for ourselves, watch other people, and like having known something, having done something that was unpleasant, uncomfortable, created suffering for ourselves and others, sort of vowed to never do it again, and then hardly any time passes, and all of a sudden you look, damn, I'm doing it again. or oh God, there he is, he's doing it again. Creating more suffering, more confusion. And so it's like what, on one level you can know, that really didn't work, that was suffering. But on another level, it's like on an experiential level, I didn't really learn the lesson, didn't really get it. So that our ideals and our even our kind of hopes and dreams are kind of insubstantial until we really learn to base them on experience, to come back to experience, and to learn how to tune into things on an experiential level. And in order to do that, it's important to it's not something that, you know, all of a sudden, okay, now today's the day I'm going to change my whole way of relating to my existence, and I'm going to work from a wise relationship to my experience. I mean, it can't be done like that. It's nice ideals, but you have to learn how to do it in small increments, bits at a time. And that's what practice is. And they say that, and that maybe the sense of experience being trying things out, trying to put things into practice. So that's why, say, in Buddhist practice, you bring things back to very fundamental levels. So like the learning how to experience the breath, learning how to experience something as simple as the breath. In-breath, the out-breath, learning how to, where does one experience the breath? Where does one feel it? Where does it most, where is it most prominent? Where does it feel most sort of free and clear? Where does it feel most constricted and tight? What does it feel like? How can I connect that to the rest of my body? How can I experience the breath and the body together? So that exploring that experience and just one breath at a time and learning how to explore and investigate on that very simple, tangible level of one breath at a time. As one takes that very simple object, simple sensation, simple experience, one starts to notice subtleties in terms of just how one does experience the breath, how the body can be calm, or it can be energized, or it can be tense and tight, or it can be relaxed and feeling soothed, and you can do that with the breath as the fundamental core of experience, and then learn how to extend that into how one actually feels in terms of on a mental event, on an emotional level. How does it feel? Does it feel comfortable? Does it feel pleasant? Does it feel unpleasant? And extending that simple, say, physical sensation into the experience of the mind. Because of what it does, it starts to, that very simple act of breathing starts to open, and as you attune into the experience, it starts to open out into, say, a broader experience of the body, a broader experience of the mind, to attend to that experience. It's something very simple, but it has major kind of implications or repercussions. You know, in the same way that if you you throw an object into a pool of water, and you know, it's a simple act, just to drop a stone into a pool of water. But what happens is they, you know, there's ripples and waves that come from that, and they go out in all directions. And then they bounce off things on the side or any other objects that are around, and then they bounce in different directions. So that, say, a very simple act has major repercussions. And that's the fundamental basis of, say, like of right view in a Buddhist, from a Buddhist perspective, that on a you know, your ordinary worldly level, to have right view is to recognize that there are actions and the results of actions, whether those actions are physical, verbal, or mental. they all have repercussions. And that's the, when the Buddha talks about having right view, having the, let's say, correct perspective, it comes back to this sense of recognizing how there is these actions, the results of actions. There is good. There is that which is not good. In terms of results, there are repercussions in this world. There's repercussions in the next world. There are beings who are in different realms. There are beings who have purified themselves. This is sort of a fundamental right view, but it's based on actions and the result of actions. So that in the same way that, you know, when you throw a large rock into a body of water, you can't really, it's hard to imagine how all of those ripples, different ripples, are going to, all the patterns that they're going to make and the effect that it's going to have. In the same way, you know, our actions, take on, they have many, many different results. But the fundamental, on its simplest level, is recognizing that an action has a result, and as a tendency, those actions which are skillful, which are wholesome, those tend to bring results that bear happiness and well-being. Those actions, whether they're body, speech, or mind, that are unwholesome, unskillful, negative, they tend to bring dissatisfaction, distress, agitation into the mind. That's how one experiences it. So it's a very simple principle. But it has many repercussions because we're constantly engaged in activity. We're constantly dropping rocks into the pool. We're constantly creating these waves going out all the time. And then they come back to us. So that rather than trying to figure out all of the ramifications, repercussions of every single action, it's just important to pay attention to the principle. Keep it very simple. In the same way that, say, in meditation, trying to calm the mind, trying to develop states of peace and tranquility, one pays attention to something very simple, like the in-breath and the out-breath, and refines that awareness of the in-breath and the out-breath, and the result tends to be calm, tranquility, a settled quality in the mind. In the same way, in terms of trying to understand our actions, what do we do with our life? Where do we put our attention? So that rather than trying to put attention onto all the multifarious details of what could be, what might possibly happen, what might have been the reason, come back to the fundamental principles that there is results of actions, actions being, whether it's body, speech, or mind. And that the, you say, that which is wholesome and skillful brings well-being, and that which is unskillful brings kind of distress into the mind. And learning how to pay attention through experience, does it, you know, is that how it feels? No. And rather than getting into the details, because we can justify just about anything, you know, whether it's, you know, something that is, you know, our aversion, our anger, our ill will. We can justify it. We can become very righteous. We can find all the reasons why it's appropriate. But the reality is, on an experiential level, it feels bad. It feels bad for oneself. If it's expressed, feels bad for others. Kind of desire, the kind of that seeking of gratification, selfishness, you know, all of those tendencies that we all have, on a theoretical level and on a idealistic level, we all recognize, oh, that's, you know, it's not so great, not so worthy of holding on to. But yeah, we keep coming back to them. So that it's important to tune into the experience, so that we can really get a much sort of tangible motivation for relinquishing, for changing, for trying something else. You know, in the same way, it's our experience of generosity, of kindness, of peace, of tranquility. When we really experience it, when we really tune into the experience, that's when we get highly motivated to practice, to be more attentive to our meditation practice, our spiritual practice, really putting the principles into practice. So that attending to the experience, and keeping it simple, keeping it as simple as possible. Because the simple doesn't mean kind of simplistic and shallow. What it means is we're able to tune in more clearly to the reality of certain ways of being. When we can tune in more clearly to, say, those fundamental principles that something which is what the Buddha points to as wholesome and skillful facilitates our happiness and well-being. The things that the Buddha points to as unwholesome, unskillful, and that it leads to more suffering, rather than either taking it on faith or believing in it as a teaching, or feeling compelled to believe it for some reason, one experiences it for oneself. And when we have that experience, and we keep returning to that experience, then there's a very strong element of confidence arises, that our practice starts to have its own momentum. One is motivated to stick with the practice. One's motivated to really relinquish. One's really motivated to develop. Say, developing that which is peaceful, is skillful, is conducive to happiness. One's motivated to relinquish those things which are obstructive. But it's important to keep returning to the experience. And it's not just in spiritual practice. I mean, it's in ordinary aspects of life. It's the same. When we experience some particular kind of food, and I say, "Wow, that was quite delicious," and then you're way more motivated to eat it again. Whereas you have something that's really, really bitter. Wow, I really don't like that. I remember one time I was out, I was on Tudong, sort of traveling as a wandering monk. There was a novice was with me, so that this one particular day we went alms round in a hill tribe village, and then all we got was a bit of plain rice, and then the novice noticed some a kind of vine, or it was similar to a vine that had a vegetable on it, that they would eat in the northeast of Thailand, which is where we're from. But we weren't in the northeast of Thailand. So that he took this particular vegetable and sort of mixed it with the rice and boiled it and made a kind of a rice porridge, so that would be able to stretch out what we had and give us enough energy for walking for another day. And then it was just horribly bitter. horribly bitter. And we both got really sick. But I've never eaten that again in my life. It's just the experience. It just completely motivates you. Like, no way, I'm just not doing that again. So again, the experience, you learn it on a cellular level. It just, you move away, or you're drawn to things. So that in our spiritual practice, it's similar. Really learning how to experience, and then not, because so often the mind jumps in and then tries to either, complicate the pleasant, to sort of suck out what it can, as much as it can, out of the pleasant, or to justify the unskillful, the sort of the inappropriate. It's got all, we can, amazing capacity for justification. But it's really important to pay attention to the experience, because one of the fundamental characteristics when the sort of different mental states are kind of broken down into their you know, on an experiential level. A wholesome mental state is intrinsically, there's a quality of calm and stability in that. And an unwholesome mental state, intrinsically there's agitation there. And it's just sort of, it's a fundamental part of nature. So that learning how to tune in to the experience. So if something is agitated, unsettled, and as much as one can justify, one knows experientially this is not going to lead to increased well-being and happiness or peace. So that one can turn away. And then when one sees that something is, that is, that feels, one feels at ease, and feels settled, then to support that, encourage that, to prop it up, to make much of it, to try it out over and over again, to experience it in a more consistent way. So that's, you know, that's what practice is. So that to, on a certain level, keep simplifying the practice. Don't make it more complicated. Keep simplifying it so that you can experience it much more directly. You'll find that the results will come on their own. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.